this is fresh air. Saddam Hussein has tried to refocus attention from Iraq's occupation of Kuwait to Israel's occupation of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. A couple of peace initiatives have linked Iraq's withdrawal from Kuwait with a Mideast peace conference that would resolve the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. For over a decade, the Israeli group Peace Now has been at the forefront of the Jewish movement advocating negotiations with the Palestinians, withdrawal from the occupied territories, and the creation of a Palestinian state. But what does Peace Now think of linking this to Iraq's withdrawal from Kuwait? We called Janet Aviad, a leader of Peace Now, to find out. She spoke to me earlier today from Jerusalem.
I don't think that Saddam Hussein is a reasonable partner for any one of us to deal with, given his positions towards Israel and given his historical record. The man does not seem to want to solve problems through compromise and through negotiations, as opposed to Mubarak, let's say, who does. It would be very, very difficult to convince an Israeli to sit down at an international conference with Saddam Hussein across the table.
But if there were a Mideast peace conference, wouldn't he be in on it one way or another?
Well, he might be. It depends on what situation he's in and what he's done in the meantime. If he gets out of Kuwait 100%, and if he renounces war with Israel and wiping Israel off the map, but when he says every day on the radio, I'm going to throw bombs into Israel and all of Palestine for the Palestinians, right, then he's not a partner. If he says to us, as have the Palestinians, we accept state alongside state and mutual simultaneous existence recognition, then he's a partner. But he hasn't said that. The opposite. His message is really a message of war right now and the elimination of Israel. So therefore, he becomes the more radical of the Arab powers in opposition to Egypt and even Syria now, and in opposition to the Palestinians' position towards Israel, the official position, which remains the same so far as it was in November 88 in the last PNC meeting in Algiers. That's the position that we accept as the official Palestinian position towards compromise with Israel, but this is not the position of Saddam Hussein.
If there were a Mideast peace treaty that was organized, linked to Saddam Hussein's withdrawal from Kuwait, do you think that that would be starting Mideast peace negotiations with bad faith? You know what I mean? If it was linked to something Saddam Hussein initiated?
I don't think we would get Israel into the game. And I don't think that Peace Now or any peace movement would have... the only peace movement that's large is Peace Now, and we wouldn't have the slightest chance of affecting Israeli public opinion on linkage. It just won't work with Saddam Hussein, given Saddam Hussein's present position. If Saddam Hussein gives into the demand that have been enunciated either by Baker or the UN, then we have another chance. But he hasn't given us the slightest, sense that he's prepared. If he makes a 180-degree change, as he could at the last minute, by the way, because he's known to make impulsive changes, then it's another story.
You know what some people have been saying? Isn't it absurd that we might go to war because people don't want to have a peace conference?
That's not the reason you're going to war. That I think, is utterly ridiculous. A really distorted view of the situation. I understand the American and UN position to be the war is caused by the invasion of Kuwait and all that followed after that, and not because of an international conference. If you accept that point of view, then you've really bought the... Look, Saddam Hussein did not invade Kuwait for the Palestinians. Let's get history right. The Palestinian issue is a separate issue for him. He may be concerned with it or he may not be concerned with it. He certainly didn't take, by the way, up till now, a lead position in the Palestinian issue. Suddenly he links it, and I understand why he links it from his political point of view. It's a very nice manipulation of the issue. But we shouldn't be stupid enough to fall for that. He went into Kuwait for his own reasons. He has debts, and he doesn't have enough oil in order to pay them off. So he goes into Kuwait, and Iraq has been trying to get into Kuwait for years. It's not a new issue. Then he links it to Palestine. Okay, now I'm in favor of Palestine. I'm in favor of two states. I'm in favor of talking to the PLO. But not as a result of his invasion of Kuwait. You understand it? And the Israeli peace camp on the whole is in favor of talking to the Palestinians. But tomorrow, call a peace conference, not linked to Kuwait, and we'll go to it. We will. Our government won't.
Here in the United States, there is a growing peace movement that is opposing the possible war in the Gulf. Has peace now been demonstrating against war? Where does peace now stand on the possibility of war?
The Israeli peace now movement, which is the center of the peace now movement, has not demonstrated against the war because, first of all, you have to understand the Israeli movement, that's not our issue. We're not against wars in general or wars in the region in general. Our issue is the Palestinian-Israeli issue, and Israel right now is still not in the center of the Kuwaiti conflict. So we would hope that this conflict could be ended by peace through negotiation.
Saddam Hussein has said that he would attack Israel first if Iraq is attacked by the United States. The United States has asked Israel not to attack back. Israel said that it would attack Iraq if Israel is attacked. Does peace now have a stand on that, or is that another issue that you're not taking a stand on?
No. If Israel is not attacked in any vital way, in other words, our position is that if a rocket lands in the beaches and doesn't touch anybody, better not to respond and not to get involved. And Israel should try not to get involved unless there is some kind of a vital attack on Israel. Our basic position is that this is not Israel's conflict and Israel should stay out. The second thing is that Israel should not use this conflict to do anything in the West Bank.
Can you expand on that?
Yes, that we would call for, we're against any military actions against the Palestinians on the West Bank. There is a danger that people would use, the right-wing settlers would use the confusion of a war in order to hurt the Palestinians in some way or another. Obviously, we would oppose that, and we would be actively opposing that. So far, there's no indication that will happen, but it's something that we have to keep in mind, something about which we're very worried.
Can I ask what city you live in?
Jerusalem.
You live in Jerusalem. Can you give us a sense of what the mood is now with war such a strong possibility?
There's a general deep, deep concern. I would say from concern to panic. That is to say, there's something psychologically scary about chemical warfare. And people who were not afraid a week ago are now afraid today, or just decided to take measures to try to protect themselves, such as sealing off rooms and getting the gas masks, et cetera. And that's very, very widespread. There is a sense right now that in the next 24 hours, something could happen. The likelihood is that if a rocket is thrown by Saddam Hussein as a preemptive attack on Israel, it won't be thrown into Jerusalem, but more into a totally Jewish city such as Tel Aviv. So for a change, the people in Jerusalem have a slight advantage by being closer to the Temple Mount than the people do in the centers of Israeli population, such as Tel Aviv or Haifa. But the concern is very deep now, and people are glued to the radio, as I am, waiting to hear what will happen in the next 24 hours or 48 hours.
Well, I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Janet Aviad is a leader of the Israeli group Peace Now. She spoke to us from Jerusalem. After this short break, we'll talk with a longtime American peace activist who counsels people how to stay out of the military. This is Fresh Air. Since 1923, the War Resisters League in New York has worked for peace while counseling people how to stay out of the military and out of combat. David McReynolds is the co-secretary of the group, which he joined 30 years ago. 6 months ago, people were asking him what he and other peace activists were going to do now that the Cold War was over. Today, his phones are ringing off the hook with men and women seeking advice.
There are three kinds of phone calls. One phone call in the last week, which has just paralyzed the office because there's so many of them, is there a demonstration today? Where can I go? Is there a vigil? What can I do? And the second kind of phone call, which started about 2 months ago, is, I'm in the reserves. I don't want to go. What can I do? Is there anything that I can do? Can you help me at all? Someone said that you could help me. The third, which is more recent, are parents calling, saying, I think the draft might come back. What can you do to help my son stay out of the draft? And we say, look, on that last question, we want to help your son stay out, but we don't want to get your son out and then have someone else from the Black or Hispanic community go in. Let's work together to make sure the draft doesn't return and to demilitarize our society. But those are the three kinds of calls we've been overwhelmed with.
Do you think that a draft would be reinstated?
No, I think the government realizes the opposition to this war is so appallingly high and so intense so early that a draft would be widely disobeyed. They're already confronting serious problems of desertion from the military now, already, before the war has started. I don't think that, in fact, they're going to take the risks of having a draft.
So what advice are you specifically giving to people who call up and say, I'm afraid that there will be a draft and I don't want to be called up?
Our advice is that they join us in working to change the society so that our national priorities are different from sending men to the Gulf.
But you're talking long-range social change, that kind of thing. But, you know, there's a very specific worry. If there is a draft, you're either going to be called up or you're not. And so when people have that kind of specific concern about their future, what do you tell them?
We say it's in your interest to belong to an organization that has a track record as a pacifist group so that when you apply as a conscience objector, you have some basis for that. We would also encourage men not to register for the draft in the first place. The more men that don't register, the harder it's going to be for the government to put a draft in action. So there are two levels. One is don't register. The second is join an organization that is a pacifist organization so that if and when a draft comes, you can show that some evidence of sincerity of belief because of membership in a group opposed to all use of violence.
You've been getting phone calls from people who are in the military but don't want to fight in a war in the Gulf. What kind of grounds could they legally have for getting out of that if they volunteered to be in the Army or if they volunteered to be in the reserves?
The only legal grounds are that they are conscience objectors. And people have said, well, look, these guys knew what they were getting into when they signed up. Yes and no. For one thing, kids of 18 go through a lot of thinking processes and a lot of changes, you know, between 18, 19, and 20. And in many cases, they joined the reserves because it didn't seem like a war was likely. But the last thing they thought was that a war was going to take them to the Gulf. I mean, it's one thing to be in the National Reserve to defend the American nation against an invasion. It's a very different thing to ask a kid suddenly to go off to a monarchy where women can't even drive cars and say, hey, this is your job for the next 6 months or a year, and you may get killed. That's something that a lot of kids have enough sense to say, this isn't what we signed up for.
Are you getting any calls from people who are considering deserting? And if so, what do you tell them?
We are getting calls from men who are considering deserting, and we're telling them that there's no legal support that can be given to them, but that we will do what we did during Vietnam. We will provide shelter and help for them. But that's not there's no way people can avoid consequences of their actions. If they desert, they can't go to Canada this time, and they may end up facing federal prison. Two members of our own staff are felons from World War II, where they served prison time for refusing induction. You just can't always avoid consequences. We do support the men who are deserting, and they are calling us, yes.
How did you end up becoming a member of the War Resisters League over 30 years ago?
Well, it was a break with family tradition because my father was a lieutenant colonel in the Army and my grandfather was a lieutenant colonel in the Army, so it was something of a break. But I had moved politically to being very critical of the military, and when the Korean War came, it was also a time of choice and decision for me. And in 1949, I think it was, I registered as a conscience objector and then got in touch with the League a year or two after that.
So what were your grounds for staying out?
At that time, my grounds were religious. I was raised as a Baptist, and as I read the New Testament, there was no way you could, in fact, be a Christian and support the use of war. Now, I've changed since then. I would not say that I was religious in an orthodox sense at all, and I wouldn't claim to be a Christian. My objection now is that I just find the use of military force to solve problems something that belongs way back in the history of humanity, and that our hope of surviving as a race, not just as a nation, but as a race, does depend on men and women increasingly breaking with the pattern of organized violence. And those would be my grounds today for opposing the use of force.
Is it more difficult for a secular person to get a conscientious objector status than it would be for someone who has religious principles that they can point to?
Yes, it would be. It would be harder.
Do you think that that's fair?
It's not fair. It's one reason that I almost went to prison back in 1952 when I was at that time still a Christian. I finally refused to answer questions about God, and my exemption was withdrawn. But the reason I wouldn't answer those questions was I had close friends who were atheists, and along with me, members of the Socialist Party of Norman Thomas. One of those went to prison for 2 years, and I thought I was taking special privilege by answering questions about God. So it is harder. We have won rights, however, over the last decade, with help from the American Civil Liberties Union. Men who are not Orthodox or who are agnostic can, if they prove a philosophical opposition to the use of all organized violence, they have won the right to be classified as conscience objectors.
David McReynolds, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
David McReynolds is co-secretary of the War Resisters League in Manhattan. This is Fresh Air.